Welcome to the Conestoga Podcast. This is Program 27 for May 22nd, 2007. Conestoga is Oklahoma's largest literary science fiction and fantasy convention, and it's time once again for another podcast recorded at Conestoga 10. This time it's the obligatory What is Podcasting panel. My co-panelists are artist and author Jannie Wirtz and author and podcaster Maggie Bonham. I want to thank you for joining us. This is the first year that Conestoga is doing podcasting. This is the first panel of the day, which is called What is Podcasting? And not to toot my own horn, but we are the second convention to do podcasts. We were inspired by Paul Fisher of Balticon and the Balticon podcast, who's done just an amazing job with recording interviews and guests to promote his own convention that he works on. I want to do a quick introduction here. Let me adjust my microphone here. And I'm going to be the moderator, or I'm going to attempt to be the moderator. I'm Chris Murley, and I do podcasting. I'm a fan, and my goal is to promote the convention of Conestoga. I have the author and illustrator, Jannie Wirtz, and Maggie Bonham, and I'd like them each to introduce themselves and tell us a little bit about themselves.
My name is Jannie Wirtz, and I've done about 14 novels and a collection of short stories, and I also illustrate my own covers, and I've done illustration on the New York Marketplace prior to that, so that's who I am.
I'm Maggie Bonham. I am an author of 22 books, including the fantasy novel Prophecy of Swords. I also have a couple of books coming out, or a couple of novels coming out next year. I also do podcasting. I have podcasted Prophecy of Swords as a patio books. And I have also... And I also have my own show called The Sci-Fi Traveling Roadshow.
Thank you. Just to give you a little background, if you're not familiar with what podcasting is, well, how many of you know what a podcast is? Okay.
Two.
Well, I'm sure people who are going to be listening to this know what podcasting is, but just to give a brief rundown, audio on the internet has been around for many years. What podcasting is different is that you can subscribe to a feed, automatically download them to your computer, listen to them on your computer, your iPod, your MP3 player, burn them to a CD, listen to them in your car. And people release them on a regularly scheduled basis, and they can be professional radio shows. I've heard Living on Earth, off of NPR, from fan podcasts like ours. Then there's tons and tons of fan podcasts out there, anime, comics, Firefly, you name it, they've got it. And what I'm going to do here is I'm going to turn it over to Maggie for a second here, and she can talk a little bit about her own podcast, which is the Sci-Fi Traveling Roadshow, and what she's done to get involved with that.
Oh, thank you very much. What I've been doing with the Sci-Fi Traveling Roadshow is that it's a podcast directed primarily towards people who are interested in small press publishing. Small press authors. So, for example, I will go ahead and have a flash fiction reading, then I'll have an interview with a particular author, and then I'll follow it up with two books or two book reviews that I do and tell people about these books. And they may be books that you've never heard of before. It may be from places like Yard Dog or LBF Books, or Maisha Merlin, or one of the smaller presses, and I always try to pick good books rather than pan somebody else's book. So if you listen and I recommend a book, it's because I liked it. It's not because somebody's paying me or anything like that. I simply liked the book and I thought it was worth sharing with other people.
Okay. And Jannie, I know that you're still getting set up, but I know you've recorded a number of podcast interviews already.
Yeah, there's one that from Jana Oliver's radio show, The Curious Mind, that she said was one of the most downloaded, but it was done on independent publishing and the state of business. And I've also got a MP3 file, one of my chapters available, and I'm working on learning how to create patio book excerpts so that people can get into the books and have fun.
You ought to do patio books because that has just opened up a whole new level of promotion with my books, such as Prophecy of Swords.
Well, it really has, and the thing I like about it is it's not like spamming people or sending advertising or jamming it in their ear. People can download these things if they want them, and they can stay subscription to the feed if they want it. And so I think it's the best way to get information out there to people, simply because if they don't like it, they can turn it off.
Well, that's just it. A number of them, what I've noticed is that I do have a large number of subscribers. And what happens is that, yes, eventually you do. Thank you. Eventually you do have, you know, a certain amount of attrition, but at the same point, you have a large number who just keep going forward every single time with each podcast.
Well, in my case, one of the big motivators was actually the ethics of what's going on in the business today. Mm-hmm. People aren't aware of it, but there's a lot of kickback paid to bookstores for shelf space. There's a lot of stuff that happens as far as advertising and the jockeying around for the money.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that many times the advertising, personally, I get offended because advertising is jammed at me every which way. I get junk mail, I get this, I get that, I get stuff on the computer that I don't want. So I was looking for ways to make it voluntary, and I think this is a wonderful answer.
Yeah, there's two websites. There's Escape Pod by Steve Ely, and it's a podcast magazine. They do reprints. If you have a story, send it to him, and he'll hire a reader. He does some commentary, and I've heard some very interesting short stories. And Katie Wentworth has a short story, of course, one of the co-founders of Conestoga. And let me think. Oh yes, and then Patio Books. Also, you know, as Maggie here has a patio book, basically it's intended to drive sales of the book. Mm-hmm. However, both of those, Escape Pod and Patio Books, has a, their model is a donation-based. So if you really like it, give them money. And right. Steve Ely is making money, not necessarily for himself, but at least to pay his authors. And I know Maggie's had a little success with the patio books, although there's a little bit of a downside to it, isn't there?
For one thing, you have to do the book every week, or at least an episode every week. So it's a lot of work. When you're doing it, you have to stay on a schedule. Otherwise, you know, you start dropping off, and you'll start dropping listeners and things like that. The other issue with patio books is that there's a wide range, shall we say, of talent. They do not discern between a good book and a bad book. You don't necessarily have to be published to do a patio book. You simply have to put it in the appropriate format and at least get it to the point where people can read it. So as a result, there are a number of books that are, shall we say, not that great, but there are a number of books that are very, very good too. And so, you know, that's the market will decide that. In other words, you know, you have people who have written just some awesome books. You probably have heard, I don't know, how many of you have heard of Earth Core? Okay, none of you have heard of Earth Core.
By Scott Sigler.
Earth Core is like this huge juggernaut. It's one of these books that he wrote. He did his first podcast-only novel. He got like 30,000 listeners. That is huge for a first-time author. Now, if you did that in the New York publishing, perhaps they'd go, eh. But, you know, with a patio book, that's huge. He's already made a name for himself, and he has gotten a publisher because of that. And he has produced two other patio books, or I should say two other podcast novels, one that just came out with Podiobooks, and that's Ancestor. And Scott, you can pay me money at Maggie Bonham. So he's done Ancestor, and he's also done Infection. There are other really awesome books like Moravi, which is T. Morris and Lisa Lee's book. There are Spherical Tomy, my book, Prophecy of Swords, it does pretty good. I've hit over the 1,000 listener mark, so, you know, that's not bad considering it just came out in April. So, you know, when you're looking at that, that's not bad. Most of the patio books, you know, end up somewhere around what I've gathered, somewhere between a few hundred to, you know, 200, anywhere from 200 to 800 listeners. If you go over that, you're doing pretty darn good.
Jannie, I was going to ask you something here. I'm going to make a statement, then I'll let you, you might be able to address this issue. It has to do with copyright. If you are a writer, now if you're a published writer and you want to do an author reading, we're not doing any author readings this year. The reason for that is that there's still a bit of a legal gray area on copyright, but if it's an unpublished story and you read it and then you podcast it, that's considered to be first publication.
Internet is considered publication. And this is why, unfortunately, as an illustrator or a writer, when people come and say, can I have this piece of art for my site? I have to say no, because if I say yes on the record, it releases it to public domain. Doesn't mean I don't want the exposure, doesn't mean I don't love what you're doing, doesn't mean, but in the case of a book, there are some publishers that are starting to think that alternative ways of getting the information out there is of benefit, and that when people hear a book, say, as a podcast, they might go and buy a copy because they want to read it. So they're beginning to learn that this may not be necessarily bad, but it does have a downside in that it pirates it. The good news is that in the case of me with 14 novels with major publishers, I go to them and I say, look, I want to make three chapters into an MP3 format or a pod format and let the people download it. Every time I've asked, they said yes, because they realize this isn't giving anything away. They're going to go buy the book to see what the ending is, and three chapters or so is about the most I could find the time to do anyhow. So, yes, there is a copyright issue. Does it prevent you getting a major publisher? Possibly not. Make your three or four chapters, and if there's a huge clamor and you can walk to them and say, I've got 40,000 downloads on this, and they're screaming for more, that's going to get an editor's attention. 40,000 books may not be enough to break you in, but it's going to start. It's going to get you somewhere. You have a readership.
And since you're an accomplished musician, you don't have any problem with getting music, do you? Because whereas, you know, you can't just play, you know, Bebopalula or anything like that if you want to add music to a podcast.
No, you don't. But there are places to get music, royalty-free music. A lot of it is in PodSafe.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's called PodSafe.com. I have a number of links, so if you, somebody's interested, they can email me at margaretbonham@aol.com, and I'll be happy to go ahead and furnish those links to you. The other thing is that the copyright issue is kind of on a gray area because there's now what's called a Creative Commons license, and you're aware of what that is. And why don't you explain a little bit, since I'm pushing back at you.
Well, I've got a handout up here, so if you're interested, there's a lot of select resources. And, of course, Google is a wonderful resource. You can search for Creative Commons. Basically, there are new models to allow you to put your work out there. Since I'm not a published writer, I can't really address those issues. But if you go on the Internet and search for Creative Commons, you can find out information. My interest is more in fan podcasts, but I do want to address one thing here. When you are doing a podcast, especially with an interview, it's very important that you get a release agreement here. But you also have to make sure that the release agreement is acceptable to the people that you're podcasting. So if there's any issues or anything like that, since my wife is a lawyer, Hers is pretty good. So if there's anything that needs to be adjusted, then we'll have to adjust it. But it's very important that you get make sure that you have permission to podcast the person that you're talking to. Mm-hmm.
There's one thing you might consider in the issue of music. Musicians want coverage. They want their stuff out there, too. Mm-hmm. I would never hesitate to contact the musician or the agent if you want a clip and say, look, I'm producing this. It's likely to get downloaded that many times. I can offer you that much, a token fee, mm-hmm. like a second rights fee, for a piece of, mm-hmm. just a clip of your music, and I will credit you in any way that you wish. They just might say yes, because it is money earned. Mm-hmm. It is publicity for them, and you're not coming in there and ripping them off. You're coming in there saying, legitimately, I like your music, or it inspired me to write this. I'd like to have it as a piece of this performance. What would it cost me, given that this is about how much exposure it's going to get? You never know. They might say yes.
With the PodSafe music, that's where a lot of musicians go and offer their music to podcasters, mm-hmm. just for that purpose. There's a problem where if you, let's say you choose a particular big group that's been recorded by a big record label, what generally happens is that there's a corporation that comes down with a big sledgehammer, even if the musician says, yes, yay, yeah. Verily.
Not if you do it through legitimate channels.
Right.
If you do it through legitimate channels, the musician's going to have permission from their publisher to do it. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, if they have a wise contract, which they may not, the publisher may not have the right.
Yeah.
So you just have to, I'm saying don't ever hesitate to go through legitimate channels. Mm-hmm. The worst that they can do is say no. And if you offer them $50 or $100, you might just get a yes because it's money earned they wouldn't have.
Yeah, there's also, you could also pay, I believe there's some ASCAP fees. I haven't done too much research on that. I mostly look for people that, you know, I can you play some music for me? But mm-hmm. yes. Depending on how well-established a musician is, if they're more established and they're associated with the RIAA, you can pay the fees if you can afford that if those fees. But there's a lot of, just like there are up-and-coming writers, there's also up-and-coming musicians. Mm-hmm. So the lower down they are on the food chain starting out, the more likely you are to get permission to use their music. But if there's something you really want to use, then, you know, make sure that you follow all the rules, and if there's any fees that need to be paid, pay those fees. Now, let's see. What else can we talk about?
Equipment,
yes, equipment. It's very important. Now, if you already have a laptop, the cost of entry is pretty low, although if you don't have a laptop, you're going to have to spend probably about $2,000, maybe $1,000, because you can get a decent laptop for about $500. But the equipment here, the mixer I have here, is probably about $100. Mm-hmm. The microphones and stands, I probably spent a total of about $300 or $400 on my equipment. Now, you can also just start with basically a little MP3 player that has a little microphone. Mm-hmm. Or if you have just a laptop, you can get a microphone, a computer microphone, and get free software like Audacity. Mm-hmm. If you have a Macintosh, you probably want to use GarageBand, which is, an excellent piece of software. Maggie's getting out her equipment here. So you can spend thousands of dollars on professional studio equipment, but if you're just do a fan podcast, you want to talk about anime or Firefly, although there are plenty of podcasts that already do that, you can start your own podcast fairly inexpensively if you want to do that. There are networks out there, websites, so that when you create your podcast and you set up your RSS feed, you can even host it on certain ones. I believe yours hosts just on Libsyn.
Yes, I use Libsyn, and it's a very cheap hosting. They're aimed at podcasters in particular. For about $5 a month, you get like 100 megabytes of space a month, which is not too bad. You really can't get that off of normal web pages.
Yeah, one of the books that we recommend is Podcasting for Dummy by Evo Terra and T. Morris.
Yes.
Evo Terra is part of Michael and Evo, and they have Dragon Page cover to cover, and their Dragon Page winging it, which is definitely not work safe.
yes.
But they also have another show called Slice of Sci-Fi. Cover to cover, they interview authors, and Slice of Sci-Fi, they interview actors and producers of TV shows. And I think they might be associated with the Sci-Fi Channel on the Slice of Sci-Fi.
They're not necessarily associated with the Sci-Fi Channel on Slice of Sci-Fi. However, Slice of Sci-Fi does occasionally give them little promotional things that they provide to their listeners and whatnot.
And one of the things, I guess we ought to talk about production quality. You have Jenny, you're familiar with production, not necessarily audio, but in producing a work and doing readings and so forth. I think what I'm going to ask, I'm at a loss for words.
He's at a loss
I'm going to cut that part out. So,
whoops. Yeah, this is one of those joys of podcasting where that's where you simply can cut things out.
One of the things is the podcasters are still very new. It's only about a year and a half old, maybe 2 years now, and we're all learning this as far as from the bottom end. I mean, like I said, there are professional radio shows that are already podcasting shows later. There's also amateurs like me that are just now getting into it. And the cost of entry, like I said, again, is low, $300 or $400. Although, if you already have a laptop, just buy a microphone and you can get started that way.
The other thing is that I've got a little bit of my equipment here. This actually came from Podcast Factory. What you get is it's from M Audio. What you get is you get basically your microphone. What I need to do is I need to get like a pop screen, which is what these are called, the big foamy thingies. And then I have a USB connection here, and it more or less handles a mic input, just a small mix, and then the output, and that is it. And this is just great for a one-person show type of deal.
Can I ask you some questions? Because here's
sure.
where I'm coming in at the technical end. I was familiar with recording equipment and live broadcast for music.
Uh-huh.
Sticking into, PA system.
Sure.
When you get a USB port like what you got right there,
yes.
and you have dynamic microphones and you have piezoelectric quartz microphones that you'd use to pick up a guitar by sticking with a little putty,
mm-hmm.
I'm not getting enough volume. Now, is that because I'm going with the straight connector that goes into the PA system? Do I need to convert to the three-prong mic one? It's getting the hardware to connect has been harder to learn than the software.
What I've noticed is that my volume levels are also kind of on the low side.
Uh-huh.
And what I've ended up doing was simply using Audacity to raise the levels. And, you can play around with that with the software. And that's a plus on that.
Well, I think what we'll do is we'll investigate that more on the equipment issue. And like I said, we're learning it. If you have the right equipment, then there's no issue. But if you're still trying to get things set up, then there may be some – you can always try to consult local experts to help you set up if you know any musicians or anything like that. But one of the things I wanted to talk about was promotion. The reason why I chose to do podcasts was I thought it would be a nice way to promote a convention. There are other forms of promotion, and I'm hoping that Jenny can address this because I think she's probably used to promoting in other formats, correct? Promoting works, either, going to conventions to promote your works or even on radio shows when you do interviews.
Yeah, we both know that.
Well, there are many, many angles and many outlets, mm-hmm. but they're getting to be more every day, particularly through the internet. I mean, I've got an internet site, and so I can put certain bandwidth of almost anything and have downloadable links. There are many places you can be listed for free for podcast feeds if you have a bandwidth to put your stuff on. So that's how I've handled it. I don't pay any subscription fees, and I'm listed 4 or 5 different places.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a website guy who scouts that stuff out. There's another book that's called Selling Your Music, and I forget the author's name. He produced the book himself. It's sold. You can buy it through the internet. But that tells you all the different places where the musicians go to list what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And I bought that book because simply reading it gives you ideas as to how to promote anything else, whether it's a book, whether it's a podcast. There are many, many ways to get things listed, not just through the podcast outlets. If you can get links, if you can get reciprocal things, often if you like an author and you say, you know, I really like your books, can I get a link from my site to yours? Mm-hmm. Sometimes they'll reciprocate it. There's your podcast. If you've got bandwidth in a website, there's thousands of ways to get listed. If you happen to be a published author, Amazon has a fantastic program where you register with them as an author.
Right.
And then they will give you a chat group, basically, on Amazon. And every time somebody posts there, or every time you put an announcement on there, it goes to every person who ever bought your books.
Right.
And they've linked it up internationally. So even every time you have a translated book, it goes to all of your translation fans. So you're
right.
going worldwide all of a sudden.
Right. It's called Amazon Plogs, and it's a great way to promote your books. I usually put about a post a week there, simply because that way it always flags people saying, hey, you know, this author has something new to say.
So, yeah, that's one of the best things that's come along in a long while.
Yeah, it really is. And one of the things I noticed, and I'm not sure if you saw it, but the moment I joined Amazon Plog, my sales figures started improving dramatically. I don't know if you had that.
I noticed a spike. The other thing is have a chat group on your website. There's really inexpensive softwares that work really well. You can edit. You can get rid of the flamers. And if you cultivate it, mm-hmm. your chat site will get its own atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And people will start coming just to listen. Far more people look at those and read them than post.
Yep.
And so that's been an enormous way to keep my people informed of what's happening, because I can say, well, this publication date was moved, or this interview is happening, or this interview was just done at this convention. You better believe I take advantage of that.
Yeah.
And again, they can come to this chat group if they want to.
Right.
We're not throwing it into anybody's
face.
And at Amazon, they can check a box that says they don't want to receive
your
announcements.
Anything there. One of the things that I use a lot is live journal blogs. How many people here blog? Okay, you do. Okay. I use live journal. Other people use other blogging software, but live journal seems to have a nice community and seems to have a lot of good authors.
Mm-hmm.
And what I have found is, quite honestly, I've made sales simply because I write an awful lot on LiveJournal, and you know you'll hear me bitching about all sorts of. You might want to edit this. You may.
you can say the word.
Okay. You might. Well, bitching. Okay. I do bitch quite a bit on my LiveJournal. However, usually when I do that, it's usually posted to friends only. So I have a certain group of people who I know who are reading this. So if a publisher like stumbles across it and sees me griping about this or that, it's not going to look quite as unprofessional. But the idea, of course, is that the fans end up learning a little bit about you, learn about the writing process, what you're going through, what you're doing. They also, if you have any unusual hobbies, they kind of get to find out about those. Like I race sled dogs, so that's always an interesting thing. And you know, there's just a number of things that you can talk about on LiveJournal, and people are always saying, oh my gosh, it's a time sink. And it's like, well, yeah, but then so is promotion. So, you know, what are you doing? This is an easy way. It's free. You can get a free LiveJournal blog. I pay for a permanent, which is like $20 a year, which is like nothing, and gives me more space and more pictures and whatever else. And I think that people really enjoy reading it. And do you do blogs?
I keep the chat group, which
okay.
I can turn that into it. But no, it's something I should probably look into, because people don't know your chat group is there, but they might subscribe to a live journal.
Right. And the thing is that you don't have to subscribe to LiveJournal to read it. In fact, for those of you who want to read my LiveJournal, it's shadowhelm.livejournal.com. I mean, piece of cake. And it's a lot of fun, and it's just literally a live.
So tell me how this does a blog. You write all your stuff, but nobody can write back. So it's a one way street, or
they can respond if they wish to.
Okay,
I have it set up where if you respond, you have to be a member of LiveJournal, and it can't be anonymous. So that way I know who's. You know, who's writing their smart-ass remarks to me. But technically, anybody can read it. And you can have various levels of writing in your journal. Like, you can have very private, which is only for yourself. And then you can have different layers of friends for different things. I only have one layer of friends because that's way too complex. And then the rest of the world. So depending upon, you have different layers of security or blockage.
So some of your posts don't go out to the whole.
That's right. It only goes out to a select few, and you know who those few are.
Okay. We're running Discus chat software.
Oh, okay. Discus?
Discus. And they're now in beta test, I understand, cut the spammers that have cut into chat groups. Right now my guy is monitoring and pulling them out.
Mm-hmm. And what is your web address so people will know where they can go?
You can go DannyWurtz.com, but make sure you spell it WURTS. That's not the actual address. It will reflect you, or DannyWurtz.org, or DannyWurtz. It will get you there. Mm-hmm.
So, JANNYWURTS. Okay. Yeah, I think it ends up going like Paravia.com or something like that. Or is it go to different?
Yeah, it's Paravia.com/DannyWurtz, capital J, capital W. But you don't need to know that.
Yeah.
We've got it set up so anything will bring you there. Google search me. It'll pop right out.
And you should go look at their website. They've got some amazing stuff. Janny has a lot of stuff, and so does Dawn.
Well, I should credit Jeff Watson, who's the behind the scenes. He's a wonderful guy. He has a huge heart. He does all of that. In fact, he designed our website, Don's website, JL's website, and they all look different. He's of the belief that websites shouldn't be cookie cutters, and he puts an enormous amount of time.
Now, I'll be able to answer some technical questions after we're done here, but I do want to address, she was talking about LiveJournal, the software that we use for our website, for sftulsa.org, for Conestoga. We couldn't get Conestoga because someone else took the domain name. But we use WordPress. You can set it up in 5 minutes. Download it from WordPress.org. It has a built-in RSS feed, so when you upload your podcasts, files to that website, it automatically generates them in the blog posts, so it's very easy to do, although there are a number of other there's a lot of software out there that is available to allow you to do that, and it's not very difficult to do. The one thing you do have to keep in mind, if you're podcast becomes wildly successful, the issue of bandwidth. That's the reason why I talked about Libsyn, because since they're the host, you can pay a very low fee so that, you know, if your podcast is 20 megabytes and you have a 1,000 listeners, that's a lot of bandwidth.
Could you spell Libsyn for those people who don't know what that is?
LIBSYN.com.
And we'll also put it in the show notes on the website. When you do that's an important thing too. When you do a podcast and you're doing a show, make sure you do some show notes. It doesn't have to be very detailed. You can look at some examples on our website, although I've been lazy lately and not putting enough show notes in there. But make sure you put the author, you know, the person that you're interviewing, if they have a website, put their web address on there. Mm-hmm. And then maybe just some of the highlights, you know, kind of bullet points, you know, what you talked about. And that's very informative, because then they can go. And also, if you make a mistake and you mentioned you're talking about a particular episode of Star Trek and you mentioned the wrong one, you can correct it in the show notes, or I guess re-record it later if you wanted to.
Well, the other plus of the show notes is that once you send out the pings to all the various podcatchers and whatnot, what happens is that you actually have way of finding you. Like, for example, if you've got a podcast on, I don't know, let's say werewolves or something like that, the fact that you're talking about werewolves in the show notes is going to be picked up by, you know, all the podcatchers plus all the search engines. So that's a really, really good way for people to go in and find your show.
Okay. Although there are no podcast, there's nothing scheduled here from 11 to 12. I'm sure some of you may want to go to other panels. We have about 10 minutes left. If you have any questions, you can come up to the microphone up there. If not, I have one more question to ask each one of them. It's something I should have asked at the very beginning. Since I've been a bad moderator, I forgot to write down a lot of questions in advance. That's the reason why there's these awkward pauses, and I apologize for that. So if you have any questions, just come up to the microphone. You can turn it on. If not, then I will. Then what I'm going to do is, it's something I should have asked at the beginning, and one is, what attracted you to podcasting, and what do you hope to achieve with it? Who wants to?
Well, the first thing was I had an interview done from a convention where I read a story for literally an online convention, and I had it in the wrong format, and I thought, I got to get it switched to MP3, and in trying to figure that out, I tripped over this whole podcast world, and I think it's wonderful because I really like the idea of opening the industry back up again and having multiple points of entry for new authors so that ultimately we can have more creativity. So I said, I'm going to support this because I think it's part of the future as to how this revolution is going to open possibilities for every kind of creative endeavor.
Thank you. And
well, I'll admit, I have a iPod, and I noticed that on my iTunes there was like this thing called podcasts. And the first thing I did was I searched for science fiction and fantasy, and I ran into something called Dragon Page Winging It. And it is now Michael and Evo's Winging It. And it was so dang funny. I had to subscribe to Slice of Sci-Fi. I had to subscribe to the Dragon Page. And it ended up where I started listening, and I said, you know what? I can probably do this. Maybe not as good as they can, but dang, this sounds like a lot of fun. And then they started talking about patio books. And, you know, when I first heard it was free, I was like, you're giving away an entire book through audio? Isn't this like insane? And then I started paying attention to other models that people have been doing, and like Cory Doctorow, and how Cory has been literally giving his stuff away via ebooks, and Bain has been giving stuff away via ebooks. And I started looking at that, and I said, you know, this is one heck of a marketing tool. And, you know, most people, yeah, you're going to have some people who are going to say, I'm going to listen to all 65 episodes and not bother buying the book. But, you know, a lot of people end up saying, you know, I really do want to pick up the book for whatever reason, because even though you hear it, you still like to read. And you still like to have something physical to hang on to.
But there's another angle that people don't consider. If you have a big, massive book or a series of books, you can make a short story or a novelette that relates to it or that predates it. And you can put that out for free. And then when they want to read more, they can go get the whole shebang.
Exactly. One of the things, the reasons why I chose to do Prophecy was that I knew that Runestone of Tewas, and I was also marketing at the time Loch Leia, and that's going through Dragon Moon, by the way. You know, I have two books coming out that is in the same universe. Well, of course I want more listeners. I want more readers, because if you like what you're reading here, chances are you're going to buy the next books, or at least you're going to at least know who I am. And maybe you might meet me at a con, and maybe you might want me to sign a book or something like that. You know, that's cool, and I appreciate that. And, you know, but as I said, people, you know, yeah, I'll have a number of people who won't buy the book. That's fine. Okay. You know, that's their choice.
Well, I think that about covers everything. And I do want to make one little testimonial. I listen to a lot of podcasts now, and it has changed my buying habits. It hasn't changed my fiction buying habits, but it has changed my nonfiction buying habits. And I've bought four or five books based on listening to author interviews on various podcasts. And I haven't caught an author yet that's wanted me to go buy their book yet, mainly because I already have their books and I just want to hear their voice. So it definitely can make a difference. I want to thank our panelists, Jannie Wirtz and Maggie Bonham.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
And, of course, I'm Chris Merle, one of the podcast hosts. And thank you very much. Though a lot has changed since this podcast was recorded, a lot of it is still relevant. I encourage our listeners to check out other podcasts. If there is a subject you're interested in, there is probably a podcast for it. And if there isn't, think about starting one of your own. Conestoga 11 is almost 2 months away. We'll have more to say about this in future podcasts about all that is planned. Our guest of honor is Laurel K. Hamilton. Our artist guest of honor is John Picasso. Our toastmistress is Elizabeth Moon. Our fan guests of honor are Richard and Michelle Zellick. And our special 1632 guest of honor is Eric Flint. For now, you can check out the Conestoga website for all the details. So thanks for listening until our next Conestoga podcast. For more information, our web address is www.sftulsa.org or send an email to conestoga@sftulsa.org. Questions about our podcast may be sent to podcast@sftulsa.org. Please send us an email or put a comment on the website and let us know what you thought of this podcast.